everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jen Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. This right here is Nick Wright. Happy birthday, America. You don't look a day over 243. Big show today. First of all, we're here. But for another reason, Kevin Durant's departure from the Warriors was a little messier than we thought. Ezekiel Elliott sidestepped another suspension. Feeling all patriotic with the music behind us. But we continue to start today's show the way we've started the last couple days, and that is with the Kawhi Leonard sweepstakes. The reigning finals MVP, pretty much the last free agent left standing, touched down in Toronto yesterday. Kawhi reportedly met with the Raptors, his last stop on his free agency tour. That included the Clippers and the Lakers. Mom's been the word from Kawhi's camp. Chris, who's in a fantastic mood this morning, you had the latest update last night. This is what you tweeted. A lot of premature reports out there. Kawhi has not made his decision as of yet. All three teams are still in play. Yes, Lakers and Clippers are as well, and I'm 100% certain of this. I wouldn't hold my breath on getting an answer anytime soon. Kawhi still undecided. See, million-dollar question on everyone's mind. When will Kawhi sign?
I think he's going to make an announcement on Friday, and that hasn't changed from what we talked about this weekend, what we talked about Sunday before free agency opened, and what I think I announced on this show on Monday, that the process was it didn't start for him at 6 p.m., even though his camp and Magic, they made plans as far as having a discussion on Sunday. They planned on meeting with the Lakers and the Clippers on Monday and Tuesday in free agency. And then after that, they would meet with the Knicks and Brooklyn and then ultimately meet with Toronto. Given what happened with KD deciding early, him and Kyrie already had a deal going to Brooklyn, so that removes Brooklyn out of the chase. The Knicks were concerned about Kawhi when they would get to him and if they had a real chance. When they got information that they might not have the best chance to sign them, so they got out of it on Sunday. So then it became the meeting with the Lakers and the Clippers. We saw yesterday him deciding to go back to Toronto to meet with them. We are on what their scheduled plan was. I just think that the public, because this is a year like no other year we've seen in free agency, where we had more deals already done. We didn't get Kevin Durant visiting several teams. We didn't get LeBron James thinking about what he was going to do. No, these deals were already done, and it's affected how people think Kawhi should do things. Based on what they planned on doing, going to free agency, they are on schedule. Fortunately, unfortunately, the holiday comes right after the third meeting, so is that going to delay an announcement another day? But I know as of yesterday, 6 p.m., no team had an edge. And what I said in the tweet was exactly what was conveyed to me. I asked a few questions, but it was very, very direct as far as every team is still in it. They have a great deal of interest in the Clippers. There's a great deal of interest in the Lakers. And we knew the team that everyone has to overcome, that's Toronto. And the reason why, because Kawhi makes a lot of decisions based on trust. Why do I have the information? Because they trust me, because I've been knowing Kawhi since he left San Diego State and decided to come into the NBA. They've trust how I've reported it, and they trust that I'm going to get it accurate to what they say, not what my opinion is. Toronto has that over everyone. The doctors, the coaching staff, the city, he's comfortable. Kawhi trusts his career with the Toronto Raptors, and the Lakers and the Clippers are going to have to convince him and take some of that trust for him to decide to play basketball with them moving forward.
And so just to not necessarily clarify, but to make it crystal clear, what was communicated to you yesterday was any reports that Kawhi is waiting to announce his decision, but he's already made his decision, are incorrect. That the idea, it is not that Kawhi is just elongating this process. It is that as of when you talked with them yesterday, he still didn't know where he wanted to go.
No, and I'm talking to the people who are the closest people to Kawhi Leonard.
Nick, are you surprised that he genuinely doesn't know? We sat here on the show the last 2 days and talked about how, if all things being considered, save for maybe organizational structure, the Lakers just appeared to be the front runners, in our opinion, in the opinion. Are you surprised that he genuinely, at this point, after knowing what he knows about all three teams, doesn't know where he wants to play next season?
I'm not, because this also isn't that different from what we've seen from the best free agents in other classes.
Yeah, this is just a different year.
It's in 3 years ago today, July 4th, 2016. Kevin Durant announced his decision at 8:59 a.m. Pacific time. I remember because I was filling in for Colin that day. So right before noon on Eastern time on July 4th, 2016, LeBron announced he was going back to Cleveland on July 11th.
Yep.
LeBron had the decision to go to Miami on July 8th.
But in both of those cases, you don't think they knew they had a better idea? It was less ambiguous where they wanted to go?
I think
LeBron made his decision last year, do you think it was like, do I really want to go to the Lakers or do I want to go to the Clippers? I think we all knew.
Well, but LeBron, with the Lakers, he did it quickly. It was the Lakers' decision was quick.
It's not the LeBron decision to the Lakers. It's all
LeBron
the other ones that where the precedent has been. We're in the same time frame that they went through.
Right. And so Kevin Durant met with Russell Westbrook and other people, and then he met with the guys in the Hamptons, and he chose the Warriors. And he also met with Boston. He met with a bunch of teams. Kawhi, it would appear, is conflicted. Because I don't want to yada yada the negatives the Lakers have going against him. When Chris said the number one thing for him is trust, and with the Lakers, the biggest question mark is, who can I trust? That might be enough to trump that they are in the city he wants to be in, and they have the most talent. Like, that is why the only reason, to me, the Clippers are involved in this is because they have the same city as the Lakers without the trust deficit of the Lakers. The only reason Toronto has not already won this sweepstakes is because of location. It's not where he's from, and it happens to be, not only is it not where he's from, it's not like he just won a championship in Oakland or in Sacramento. It's as far from where he's from as you can get. This is a tough decision.
Yeah.
And so I'm not going to begrudge. I know we are in a society where anything that didn't happen the last 6 hours is four news cycles ago. I'm not going to begrudge Kawhi Leonard on the most important professional decision he's ever made, because he's never been a true free agent, if he wants to take 96 hours on it. I mean, the free agency opened Sunday at 6 p.m. It's Thursday at 6:30 a.m. And people are like, geez, Louise, what's taking you so long? I don't think he knows where is the best for him. And there's no take backs on this.
Right. And a lot of people think that it's taking so long because of how quickly the other free agents made their decision this year.
Yeah, of course. In the first 24 hours, the NBA spent $3 billion.
Yeah.
And everyone thought that Kawhi Leonard, like, he should fall in plan, like he should change his plan. This is a tremendous decision. There's a lot of information. The reason why he went to the Lakers and Magic Johnson was because of the trust factor, and Magic was going to be able to give the Lakers birth or kill the Kawhi to the Lakers immediately. If they didn't feel like those answers from Magic were consistent, and they've done a great job as far as interviewing people, and they kept the people apart, the way they interrogate people at the police station.
Yeah.
You and your buddy, y'all committed a crime. Well, you go over here and you go
and
over
here.
Let
me see if the answers jive together.
Absolutely. And also, they're testing these teams as far as the information and what they know, and to see who's going to leak some information, because that would affect Kawhi and his determination of how he's going to move forward. But I know as of yesterday, like, this is a very tough decision. And I thought when they started, I thought he was going to have to make a difference between two cities. And I thought he'd have to pick one team in Los Angeles. I thought both teams would have an interview in New York. He'd have to pick one team here, and they would have to battle against Toronto. But from what I'm hearing, there are two teams in L.A. that Kawhi, from the beginning, said he would go to, even after requesting a trade to the Lakers. When they denied that, he said, I will go to the Clippers. He said that yesterday. In Toronto, that's where he has the most faith and the most trust as we speak.
Moving on to the Warriors, perhaps We'll never know the real reason Kevin Durant decided to leave Golden State, but his feud with Draymond Green was rumored to be partially to blame. And while both publicly said they patched things up from their November sideline verbal altercation, that may not be the case. According to Kendrick Perkins, quote, KD never bounced back from the Draymond situation. Nick, who's to blame for Durant's departure?
Shout out to Kendrick Perkins. This is good information. Also, Kendrick, you still owe me a little bit of money. You can send me that whenever you want.
The information part.
Yeah, pay my guy.
Now, Kendrick and Kevin Durant are incredibly tight, and that's why I take this almost as gospel. And I watched this, and he gave a lot of comments on this. It said, for the first time I heard a specific quote from that exchange. It wasn't just that Draymond called Kevin Durant the B word. According to Kendrick, he said to him, you know you're a B word, which is even extra cutting if it's from one friend supposedly to another, the guy who initially recruited you there to another. So I understand why that this might have been looked at as the final straw. But the fact that this happened on November 13th of this season. The fact that 2 weeks into the season where you are going for a three-peat, where Kevin Durant is ostensibly going for his third straight finals MVP, 2 weeks into that season, you could be in a position where there is a final straw situation, shows you he was always leaving. This was always temporary. As soon as he got there, he started to regret choosing to go there. In fact, before he even got there, we know that from what he said he told Rich Kleiman, which is the day after he made the decision, July 5th, 2016, why did you let me bleep up my life? Like, Kevin Durant had a wandering eye and had regrets, rightfully or wrongfully, about choosing Golden State the moment he did it. So to all of a sudden place this at the feet of Draymond Green, Kevin Durant was looking for a reason to leave. Draymond might have given him the last reason, but Howard Beck, who I have tremendous respect for, reported that before this ever happened, KD and Kyrie were already talking about playing together.
I mean, there are rumors that almost as early as a year before that, the two of them were meeting up. We saw video of them in the hallway. Yes. A year before this altercation, the two of them talked about playing together. So I think it all sort of factors in.
Yeah, people try to say that we're going to treat people the same. But in pro sports, it becomes impossible. I remember when we went out and acquired Warren Moon, and we were in desperate need of a quarterback. And Warren Moon accomplished, coming from Houston. When we signed him, Denny Green met with the leaders of the team, and we had a team council and everything. He said, I'm gonna change some of the rules. On the road, typically everyone has a roommate. But that's not going to happen to Warren Moon. Warren Moon's an experienced quarterback in this league. I think Warren was 38, 39 at the time. He's not going to have a roommate. At training camp, he's not going to have a roommate. So I just want you guys to know, because I want to be semi-consistent with the things that I do. And I learned an awful lot from Denny Green. And years after that, you know who started getting that type of treatment?
Chris Carter.
You know who had the best parking space? Chris Carter. You know who had 2 to 4 sideline passes to every game? Chris Carter. You know whose family had the best seats? Chris Carter. And you know who has that in Golden State? Steph Curry. And the truth of the matter is, that wasn't the issue. That just happened to be the straw that broke the camel's back. But Kevin Durant, since the first championship, staring down LeBron James, that big shot, you and I have seen, Nick, the ownership, the locker room, the coaching staff, everyone thought Steph Curry was always special. Kevin Durant could never rise to the level. They saw things that Steph would do things in film study, on and off the court, and have been like, they don't say anything to Steph. And that bothered KD. So KD, even from the beginning, might have been questioning, should I come there? But once he got there and he started seeing the treatment of Steph Curry, and it was not the same as the treatment that he was getting, and then I just believe that his relationship or lack of a strong relationship with Steve Kerr, because Steve Kerr didn't help the position. So it was a number of things. The treatment of Steph Curry was not parallel to the treatment that he was getting, and that he could see, he didn't see eye to eye with Steve Kerr and how they wanted to play basketball. So there were a number of things. I appreciate Kendrick. I told Nick, when they said this, he would never recover from it. I have never seen an athlete in exchanges like this. Oh, we might move on. But I will never forget what you said. And athletes take those words to heart.
And people get upset when I say this, but this is not speculation. I know this to be true. Durant has always measured himself up against LeBron. He's been chasing LeBron. He, for a number of years, has thought he's better than LeBron. And people looked at LeBron's move to Miami, not that dissimilar from KD's move to Golden State.
And I believe that to be a good thing.
Right. It's not a bad thing at all. But yes. Here's why I bring it up. After 1 year in Miami, after LeBron failed in the finals, after they lost, D-Wade went to LeBron and said, "Hey, man, it has to be your team. You have to be the guy." After 1 year in Golden State, when KD succeeded in the finals, won finals MVP, at no point did someone say to him, "Hey, KD, Steph didn't come to him and say, it has to be your team. We all have to follow you." And so there's an element of, you got to be kidding me. I did what he couldn't do, and he got the privileges that I will never get here. Those things matter to a guy who is as online as KD is, as in his head as KD is.
I was going to say, but Kevin Durant didn't fail. He went there and accomplished everything he wanted to accomplish there.
And did not get that's my exact point.
But maybe there was no reason for Steph, what he was looking for. There was never going to be that opportunity for Steph to say, it didn't work with me being the leader. You need to be the leader. I don't know what else he could have gotten there that he wasn't getting.
Well, that's why I don't
blame. I'm going to tell you something, man, that's beyond money. And you and I, Jenna, talk about it. It's about respect. All right? And that ultimately, it might not be how much money you have, but let me tell you what Shannon Sharp and I talk about. I know Skip Bayless and Colin. I know they came here, established this network. But Shannon and I are going to get some damn respect. We're going to work hard for it. But ultimately, that's what the dollars will have to say, too. But the organization, the FS1, they have to appreciate what we're doing. If we didn't think so, we would go somewhere else. That's what KD's doing. They did not appreciate what he did, even though Clay got it established, Iggy got it established, Steph got it established. They would never honor Kevin Durant for being the marksman, the superstar, the most efficient scorer that we've ever seen. So ultimately, out of respect, that's why Kevin Durant's leaving. A lot of times it's not about money. It's not about championships. Do you respect what I do?
But here's the only place I'll push back on that. I don't think Golden State could have done anything more. This is why it was always a one in sports lifetime event of Durant going to that team that had that level of success with that good of a star player. Because you can achieve at that level, but that fan base never going to love you like Steph. The media is always going to question how important you actually are. The things that Kevin Durant needed were not going to be available to him from the Warriors. The things that Kevin Durant needed was a sense of validation from all of us that, fairly or unfairly, he did not get, and a sense, according to Marcus Thompson, of deep, undying friendship with Steph Curry. And Steph is just in a different place in his life. And this is any parent, anyone that's a young parent understands, once you are full-time dad or mom and professional, you ain't got a lot of time for friends. My wife gives me a hard time. She's like, you're not a great friend. You don't have a ton of friends. Man, I ain't got time for a bunch of friends.
Yeah, I can go to a game with you guys. I can go to dinner every once in a while. But I can't be going to club with you and your wife.
Right.
You know, I can't be hanging out late like that.
And so there's just so what he wanted was, there were so many buckets he could fill up so many troughs he could fill up his bucket from. But the one he wanted wasn't available to him. Mm-hmm. So all the championships, all the money, that wasn't filling what he needed. So this idea that if Draymond hadn't called him a B, he'd still be there. Nah, man. Like, Chris.
You know what? Let's wait and see. Let's wait and see if his friendship with Kyrie in Brooklyn is enough to fill up that final bucket for him. And maybe it won't be. Maybe he's going to be one of those guys who are just always looking for something that never fully grasps it. So we'll see.
I don't know anyone that leaves sports full. And I'm talking about the greatest of them all. All right? That's what life is about. It's a journey about people trying to get fulfillment, but thinking they're going to be full after they leave sports. No, that's not the case.
Long day at work, tough day at school, still stuck at the office? Treat yourself to the meal you deserve on demand from your favorite restaurant. Restaurants come to you with DoorDash. DoorDash connects you to all your favorite restaurants in your city. Ordering is easy. Just use the DoorDash app and choose what you want to eat, and your Dasher will bring it to you, wherever you are. Not only is that burger place you love on DoorDash already, but over 310,000 other amazing restaurants are too. DoorDash connects you with door-to-door delivery in over 3,300 cities and all 50 states across the United States and Canada. Order from your local go-tos or choose from your favorite chains like Chipotle, Wendy's, Chick-fil-A, and the Cheesecake Factory. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter promo code FTF. That's $5 off your first order when you download the DoorDash app from the App Store and enter promo code FTF. Again, that's promo code FTF for $5 off your first order from DoorDash. Back to the show.
Yesterday, there was reportedly no market for DeMarcus Cousins, but recent reports have DeMar DeRozan recruiting Boogie to San Antonio to play with the Spurs. What do you think, Nick? Would Boogie be a good fit in
San
Antonio?
We talked about this.
I think DeMar, he watched the show.
Maybe. Listen, we said it would be a good fit. We know they right now don't have the cap space. But if Boogie is going to be taking an exception, maybe around the minimum, like, it doesn't look like there's a huge market for him. Stylistically, he fits what the Spurs do because he can pass so well from that position. Yep. And they have a need at center. I'd love that. For him and for the Spurs.
First team to invent load management, San Antonio.
Yep.
Where else could you repair your image better than either Nick Saban or go to Popovich, right? Mm-hmm. That's where he should go. If they can fit him in, get him the money. I believe that year he tried to do, playing chess compared to playing checkers, let Pop and them repair his image there in San Antonio.
And the Spurs were the 7th seed last year, and the West about to be tougher. They might need a little infusion of talent.
Moving on, Andre Iguodala officially becomes a Grizzly on Saturday, but reports are the former Finals MVP could be flipped to the Houston Rockets. Nick, good play for Houston to go trade for Iggy?
So this is really intriguing for a number of reasons. Everyone thought Iggy was going to be bought out, but all of a sudden Memphis is seeing that there's enough teams want him, they might be able to get an asset for him. Mm. It would be really good for Houston. Remember, they tried to sign him as a free agent a couple years ago. He re-signed with the Warriors, but here's my question. If the Grizzlies can get an asset for Andre Iguodala, why did the Warriors have to attach a first-round pick to get someone to take Andre Iguodala? You follow me? Like, there's something amiss here. If he gets bought out, I think he ends up with the Lakers. Daryl Morey and the Rockets know that, so they might trade something to make sure he can come there and pay him that $17 million.
At this point in the season, of the year, if you can get a guy that's going to be ready for the playoffs, can log those types of minutes, and, man, he is a great locker room guy. We had Wes here talk about things that he kept under the radar. You saw Kevin Durant with the spat with Draymond. Who was talking to him? Iggy was talking to him. So, man, I'm a big fan of the way he goes about his work.
All right, moving on. Kyle Korver is headed to the Phoenix Suns via trade, but Phoenix plans to waive Korver, making him a free agent. The Lakers, Bucks, and Sixers are front runners to land the sharpshooter. Nick, where does Korver best fit in?
I actually think he best fits in with the Bucks, but the Sixers desperately could use the spacing, but he's going to be a Laker. Kyle Korver been in this league as long as LeBron's been in the league. He's one of the elder statesmen. Going to go to L.A., take the veteran minimum because he's getting bought out, and try to win a championship. Mm-hmm. You have very few guys who have ever spoke as highly of an experience playing with LeBron as Korver did about his experience playing with him in Cleveland.
And LeBron changed some of his game. He took some shooting lessons from Kyle on his free throws, spent a lot of time personally with him. Anytime you have legendary players like LeBron, you're going to have veteran players, man, who have been playing off somewhere else. And they're going to decide, you know something? I've made a hell of a lot of money. Let me try to win a championship with one of the all-time greats.
And Korver owes LeBron one for missing that corner three.
Oh, my goodness. Before Durant hits that dagger.
Before Durant's game three, 2017. Yeah, still
Nick
not over it. You know what?
Ending with Kawhi Leonard. According to reports, Kawhi planned on meeting with the New York Knicks on Wednesday. The same Knicks team that struck out on KD and Kyrie. Well, apparently they turned down an interview with Kawhi for fear of missing out on other free agent targets. See, did the Knicks make the right move turning Kawhi down for a meeting?
The Knicks were in a tough position. And And the Knicks, everything changed when Kevin Durant got injured. Because I remember talking to people around the league, specifically with the Knicks. And before Kevin Durant got hurt, it was almost a done deal that he was coming to New York to the Knicks.
Yep.
Once he gets hurt, the conversations continue with Kyrie. The Knicks express to KD they have some issues with Kyrie. Didn't believe he was a max player and some other things off the court they were concerned about. And his body, his knees. So KD decides that he's going to go to Brooklyn. Kawhi Leonard, 3 weeks ago, was still playing basketball. It was only been 21 days. So he was not thinking about all these other things, all these other players. He didn't have all these other conversations that when it struck 6 p.m. East Coast time on Sunday, that he could start the process. He actually started then. They started reaching out to Magic's people on Sunday, but he knew he wasn't going to meet with the first team until Monday, second team probably Monday night or Tuesday, third team about Wednesday, and it was a five team in the hunt at the time. Once Brooklyn gets out of it, it becomes four. The Knicks had to make a decision. Do we wait till Wednesday with all these free agents? And I knew Julius Randle was their number one target if they couldn't land Kawhi or KD. Knowing that the meeting wasn't going to take place around the NBA, it was like, this is going to be a free agency like no other. You can't sit around and wait. So they had to be able to make the decision, and the Knicks called some people who they thought might know what Kawhi was going to do, and in those conversations, people expressed to them in that meeting on Wednesday, you are going to be a long shot to be able to land Kawhi Leonard. Now, Kawhi is taking the meeting for a number of reasons. And yes, you are. If he's meeting with you, you do have a chance. But it was they were informed on Sunday that it would be a long shot. Now, they were in Los Angeles just in case. But after the KD thing started rolling and the free agents, we knew Klay was going back to Golden State. Kyrie was gone. Kawhi waiting on him. They couldn't do that. And they decided to strike. And they had five players that they were going to target. And they went out and got four of them.
Okay, so here's the thing. And this jives entirely with what you said before our vacation. Before the week before free agency, which was that the Knicks were one of the teams Kawhi was going to meet with. Nobody else was saying that. You also had the Nets on that list, said it was five teams. The Nets obviously removed themselves for good reason. The Knicks, with respect to the people running that operation, who I think are smart basketball people and I have a ton of respect for, I don't understand this. Because you could have signed Julius Randle and still had the cap space carved out for Kawhi. Here's what it is. After signing Julius Randle, they signed Bobby Portis for 15, Reggie Bullock for 10, Taj Gibson for 10, and Wayne Ellington for 8. So if you simply remove Bobby Portis, Wayne Ellington, and one of the other two, there's your max cap spot sitting in holding for Kawhi. None of those guys are going to be the difference between the Knicks being a great or very good team this year or an average team. Those guys are placeholders. It's why they are on 1+1 team option contracts. The opportunity cost for some, if it was, hey, Kimba will come, but you've got to sign him now, and you've got a 2% chance at Kawhi, then you sign Kimba and you deal with it. But if what it could cost you is Wayne Ellington, Reggie Bullock, and Bobby Portis just to get in the room with Kawhi, just to try to sell him on your vision, you do that.
I totally disagree with you because I believe that the intel that they have, and then once you sign Julius Randle, there's not enough spacing on the court. Your plan for Kawhi is not. You want to sign either KD and Kawhi, or Kawhi, but then you got to get some space on the court. So you can't give – I understand the money if you're thinking about – we're talking about from basketball philosophy standpoint, though. You can't sign Randle and think you're going to sign or have a chance to sign Kawhi because Kawhi's not going to be happy with signing Julius Randle compared to some of the other free agents. Like, he would have preferred a guard or something else compared to Julius Randle. So if you get word you don't have a chance – at some time, man, you got to play the smart bet. I know you're a gambler, but, man, there's certain people that the Knicks talked to that told them they had a long shot to no shot, and they decided to go with that plan. So I can understand the numbers they might work out, but how they wanted to play basketball with Fizdale After you decide to go with Julius Randle, it's limited as far as what you have to do to piece the rest of that team together.
The one part of that, that long shot, no shot, to me are two very different things. If he's going to take the meeting, I'm going to believe it's a long shot, not no shot. And if it's a mm-hmm. if it's 1 in 50, 1 in 50, 2%.
If the Knicks would happen to call my number, 954-39, if they would have called my number, I would have told them I would move on.
Okay. And that you.
If they would have called me, I would have told them I would go out and get several players compared to being contingent upon waiting on this. I mean,
this also probably has to do with the fact that even if Kawhi was never going to meet with him, I don't know that I would have signed Ellington, Reggie Bullock, and Bobby Portis.
Yeah, that's fine.
And so I feel like what the players they ended up signing that they would have missed out on, they might have been better off missing out on even without meeting with Kawhi Leonard.
All right, let's move and talk some football now. Ezekiel Elliott, the Cowboys All-Pro running back, was informed yesterday that he will not be suspended by the NFL. Zeke was involved in an incident at a Las Vegas music festival back in May where he pushed a security guard. So Zeke can now put that behind him, perhaps learn a lesson or two, and focus on training camp, which kicks off July 26. See, what's the Cowboys' outlook now that Zeke has been cleared to play?
This is the thing with the Cowboys, and how they do things internally is a little bit different. You know, because to me, if I'm Jerry Jones, I'd be terrified. Every time Ezekiel Elliott's name was associated with anything outside of football, it would terrify me because he's already been suspended. So how do I move forward like as if nothing happened? And I just don't know. And Dallas has not shown to me that when players are in this situation, that they challenge them to absolutely just go the other way. I told Nick this a number of years ago. It's not something that I'm proud of. But there's a number of guys, when they get drafted, I can tell you that they will end up at Park Avenue in Roger Goodell's office. I can guarantee it.
Multiple times sometimes.
I told Nick, Ezekiel Elliott, man, he's an edge guy, man. He's edgy off the field. He gonna end up in Roger's office. Now, unfortunately for him, now he's been there twice. So I'm not surprised by it, how Dallas is going to go about operating. He's their most important player. Now, I don't know what type of advice you give to your most important player besides avoiding these physical confrontations, avoiding trying to intimidate women, these things. Like, no, Zeke's decision-making has been very, very questionable. I just don't know what Dallas is going to do about it moving forward, if anything.
Zeke, though, if you're talking football and on the field, is the constant. You know what you're going to get from Zeke. I don't think the Cowboys are going to be concerned that it's going to affect anything on the field. I feel like the one variable on the field would be their quarterback position, which is the one position you don't want to have a variable. I don't think you worry that Zeke is going to have any effect on the field.
But you worry
that he's going to get in trouble.
He's going to do this and he's going to be pulled off the field.
No, Dallas is trying to make a decision if they give him this extension.
Giant money. I'll tell you this much what I would do just quickly. If I were Dallas, I wouldn't play in week one. Okay, good. We're glad you didn't get suspended. The commissioner's not going to take you off our team for a month. You're not even going to lose any money. I wouldn't play in week one. You're at home against the Giants. That's either Daniel Jones or Eli Manning. You're a touchdown favorite. You should be able to win that game anyway because you are right, Jenna. On the field, they have to have him. On the field, long term. On the field, he is their constant. And if you're going to learn a lesson from not getting in trouble? You're going to learn a lesson from being caught on video, following this lady around and then menacing and bumping into security guard. And the lesson is, I met with the commissioner. Nothing happened. And so the Cowboys, with the collective bargaining agreement, it's tough what they can do. What they can do is this. He can be a healthy scratch week one and see it taking the playing time away because they have to have him. Well, I think the Cowboys can be the best team in their division, but they have to have Zeke, and they have to know they're going to have Zeke long term.
Let me school y'all on something about team sports. You got 53 guys in that locker room. You got 20 coaches on the staff. You got another 8 to 10 guys on the practice squad. So you getting ready to punish all them because Zeke went to a music festival. Tyron Smith, the left tackle, we getting ready to punish him. What did he do wrong?
Well, how do you help ensure that it doesn't happen again?
I'm just telling you, you can't take him and punish the other guy. You punish the quarterback. You punish the defense if you remove the player.
So what
if he
do?
Is within the confines of the rules of the league, you can do something to him as far as take his money away. You can do something as far as at the facility. But you can't penalize the rest of the team.
Well, can I?
It's just not great leadership. Because what did Dak do? Did Dak do something that
no,
he
would? But can I ask you a question about that, about punishing the rest of the team? And maybe this is just cliche. Maybe it is, so you can tell me if this never actually happened. But you see, I feel like almost in military movies, but also in sports, things like that, where a guy screws up, everyone else has to run.
Yeah, in high school. They do that in high school. They do it a little bit in college.
No, it's the
someone jumps offside, but you're in pro. Every man's in business for himself. Every man is responsible for his own actions. So on some spring night, some guy is off somewhere. Now, I'm getting ready to get punished for it. Randall Cobb, his first game as a Cowboy, he getting ready to get punished for it. You can't run a team like that in pro sports. It's not done that way. People think that's old high school stuff. You know something? Everybody on the ground, everybody doing push-ups. Yeah, that's kid stuff. But when you're grown men, you expect people to act like grown men, and you treat them like grown men. So what they should do is take away his money. They should fine him. They should do something to him. If the league doesn't do it, it's up to the team to be able to do that. And the team has the power to be able to do that.
All right, back here, First Things First. So we're now joined by Sports Illustrated senior NBA writer Chris Mannix. Happy holidays.
What up, man?
Happy holiday. I'm just here to try to learn about Kawhi.
This is the place to be, apparently.
Oh, you're smart, though. You follow me on Twitter.
I do.
Chris picked up a couple other follows.
Yeah, they're a little late. You know,
late to the game?
Shorter bus, but you know what I'm saying? They got there.
Let's talk some Boston Celtics before we talk Kawhi. Different vibe in Boston this year. The Celtics of last season don't look like the Celtics of this coming season. Kyrie Irving is now in Brooklyn. Terry Rozier is now in Charlotte. Al Horford is now in Philly. Not to worry, said Boston, as they signed Kemba Walker to a four-year $141 million deal and Enes Kanter to a two-year $10 million deal, and they'll be happy they didn't have to do a complete rebuild. Mannix, are the Celtics better or worse now?
I mean, they're worse. I don't think you can look at it any other way. I mean, in a vacuum, I would say flipping out Kemba for Kyrie is better for them, just because of the locker room aspect of it. I don't think Kemba's a better player than Kyrie Irving, but the toxicity of the locker room last year and Kyrie's part in it, Kemba's a great locker room guy. He's a great teammate. He's
Kemba's
a great everything.
Kemba's close enough in Kyrie's skill set that if you believe Kyrie was just terrible in the locker room and that Kemba will be good, you can make that argument.
Yes, completely. Yeah,
I think it's even more so because the relief that the other players, knowing that someone is completely bought in, there's a different set of trust, and it's so much more empowering. So, yes, he's not the same basketball player, but as an organization, it just gives them a breath of fresh air in how they're going to move forward, knowing at least that everyone is rowing in the same direction.
Yes, and he's going to come in there having won nothing in his professional career and have a different attitude than Kyrie Irving, who had won something in his professional career. The Al Horford part is just the killer. Like, you lose Al Horford, and you trade away Aaron Baines to create the cap space to sign Kemba Walker, and you replace him with Enes Kanter and whoever they signed from France the other day. Like, then Daniel Tice is back into the mix. The strength of this team defensively was their front court. It was Baines and Horford. If you look back at the numbers they've had in the last two seasons, they have been among, if not the best defensive team in the league when those two guys shared the front court. I asked an assistant coach after Kanter signed to tell me where he was weak defensively, and I got like a manifesto back. It was like this long text message of all the ways that Enes Kanter can be exploited on the defensive end of the floor, and they don't really have a replacement. I mean, Tice is a nice player coming off the bench. Gerson Yabusele, okay. But they're going to have to figure out a way to be middle of the pack defensively in that front court to have a chance to let their offense carry them throughout the regular season.
Well, and because this is what I want people to know about Enes Kanter. He only played 24 minutes a game last year, but let's just do the per 36, which isn't always fair, but just so people have an idea. If he could play defense, he would play around 36 minutes a game. Per 36, he would give you 21 and 15. He is an exceptional offensive player. And the reason he's never been on a good team or never played big minutes on a good team is he is historically, as far as recent NBA, in the argument every year for the worst defensive big man in the league. He is a guy who is, if he's out there, they're going to run a pick and roll at him every play until the coach takes him out. Now, he showed some ability in the playoffs briefly where he seemed to momentarily for Portland have fixed some of those issues, at least to where he was passable. That is what Boston's going to have because, and I appreciate your candor on this. Not that you're always honest, but I appreciate the realism. Your realism is maybe the better way to put it, which is what has been Boston's identity since Brad Stevens got there? Defense. That is, and they still have Smart and they still have Brown, but now their job is so much harder because there is no back line. And who are you going up against in the East? Giannis didn't go nowhere. Embiid didn't go anywhere. Horford's now on the team with Embiid. And so that is, for Boston, the killer in all of this. I mean, hell, the Raptors still have Marc Gasol, even if they lose, and Pascal Siakam, even if they lose Kawhi Leonard, is Boston is now a team that, to me, is pretty obviously a less talented version, worse defensive version of a team last year that was not good enough.
But last year, they were a very talented team on paper. And the expectations were skyrocketing for where they were going to go. And by all accounts, they failed and they didn't work. This year, sure, they're less talented on paper. Is it possible this is a better team for Brad Stevens to coach? Because a lot of the things we talked about last year was that just wasn't the right team for him to coach, or he couldn't get the most out of those guys because of their various agendas.
I hope not for his career. I hope his legacy is not based on I get the more out of teams that aren't as talented. Because ultimately, in this league, it's about talent. And he's going to have to be able to coach talented players or groom younger players that ultimately become those leaders. The NBA is about talent. We're not going backwards. He's not going to run no Butler system that we're not going to catch on to, or that he can plug a two-star, a three-star. He can have fifth-year guys. Like, no, that's not going to happen. I know they're a worse team than what they were, but the pressure falls on three people. Brad Stevens, number one, he's got to be able to make the adjustments, be able to get more out of less than what he had, and Jaylen Brown and Tatum. They have to develop into superstars on both ends of the court. They had the luxury where they didn't have to always play offense. They didn't have to always play elite defense because they had so many talented players. And the last thing, Brad Stevens is going to have to, with his guy, Gordon Hayward, what's going to happen? And if he is not up to speed, if he's not athletic, are they still going to try to force those minutes on Gordon Hayward? Because that will affect the rest of the locker room.
Yeah, I agree with you. A couple things I think are the big variables as we speak right now about Boston is when they get to the season, how capable is Jason Tatum of playing power forward? I mean, not for the entire game, but for 15, 20 minutes. I mean, look, I think height-wise, he can do it. He's got to continue to fill out that body in the offseason to be able to withstand the pounding. If he could play power forward for 20 minutes per game, I think they might be onto something with their own version of the death lineup. If he can't, the problem that still remains in Boston is that you've got two guys, or three guys for two spots. And this was a problem last year.
Brown, Tatum, Hayward for two spots.
So if you do have to move off somebody, and let's say it is Jaylen Brown, what do you get back in return from him? Maybe you can turn him into something in that front court that makes them a more complete team. I do think, though, they're going to start fast. I think they're going to have the type of team where they'll jump out the gates with a great record. May not be as built to win in the postseason, but in the regular season, I think they'll start pretty fast.
All year long, I was saying Kyrie's going to leave, and I thought they were going to get nothing for him. One of the reasons I was so down on the Celtics is I thought Kyrie's going to leave. They ended up getting Kimba for him. So that if they had kept Horford, it's not AD with Kyrie, but still, Kimba and Horford and the young guys, that is a legitimate team out East. Why were they caught flat-footed on Horford? How did the Horford thing happen to where he opted out? We all thought he opts out because he's going to just sign long-term with Boston, slightly less per year, but more guaranteed. Why did they not know a year out or at midseason? We better lock him up now. What happened?
I think the short answer is that they didn't believe that there was the type of offer that Horford got, which is going to take him to age 37, that would be available to him. But Philadelphia, win now mode. They don't care what happens 3 years into that contract, at least not as much as they care about what happens those first 2 years. They didn't believe that offer would be on the table.
FS1 is your destination for the day's best sports shows. Tune in for the biggest personalities on the biggest stories. We get you started right here on First Things First. You can catch it all
Monday through Friday.
Who gets the knucklehead started, Jenna?
I get you both knucklehead started on
And put some respect on her name.
Jenna Wolf.
I'm just here so I don't get fined.
R-E-S-P-E-C-T. Back here with Chris Mannix. So we are on what feels like day 85 of the Kawhi Watch. He touched down in Toronto yesterday, reportedly met with the Raptors to discuss possibly coming back. See, you had the latest update last night, tweeting a lot of premature reports out there. Kawhi has not made his decision yet. All three teams are still in it. Yes, Lakers and Clippers are still in play, and I'm 100% certain of this. I wouldn't hold my breath on getting an answer anytime soon. Kawhi still undecided. Mannix, are the Lakers in trouble if they don't get Kawhi?
Oh, I think the Lakers, I think it, not to be too hyperbolic, but it's the difference between maybe winning multiple championships.
Dude, that was a good report right there, though.
It was. Oh, right. are we required to?
I was like, man, that. All right. Oh, hold on.
See,
I was rolling there for a second.
All right, so hold on. Let's start over.
Be hyperbolic.
Not to be hyperbolic, but I think it could be the difference between winning multiple championships in the LeBron AD era and winning zero championships in that era. Simply because if they don't get Kawhi Leonard, they're basically scrapping for whatever's left over. Maybe they go sign Marcus Morris, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, insert clutch sports client here. Like, there's just a bunch of guys that might be available that you just take because they're there. But that's not going to get you a championship this year or even close to it. And next year, when you look at the 2020 free agent class, there isn't a star that you can add to that mix unless you think Draymond Green is the star that you can put in that situation. So now you're looking ahead to maybe 2021. When it is a deep free agent class and you can get that third star. So, yes, next summer you could flesh it out with, you know, some solid role players.
Yeah.
But it's also another year where LeBron's older. Right. And it's another season that goes by where he doesn't win a championship.
Well, so if you have to have three stars to win a title, then obviously if they miss Kawhi, they can't win one this year and they wouldn't be able to win one next year. Because you're right, there are no stars. Draymond's not a star. Draymond's a star in his role, right, in his system, with his organization. But that is not something you just plug and play anywhere the way you would with most all-NBA level players. But we're not in that NBA anymore. And this is not ideal, obviously. The day they traded for Anthony Davis, I felt they were the favorites because either they would get a star or they would get those really good role players that we talked about. Patrick Beverley, maybe. Darren Collison before he retired. Seth Curry. But all those guys are gone now. So I understand that. But tell me this. In 2019-20 NBA, knowing KD's out, Klay's not going to be there for part of the year. We know what let's just assume Kawhi goes to Toronto. This starting lineup: LeBron, call him point guard, point forward. Kuzma, Andre Iguodala, Marcus Morris, Anthony Davis. With coming off the bench, Quinn Cook, Kyle Korver, Justin Holiday, and then you said clutch guys, JR comes into the fold as well. Maybe Pau Gasol or JaVale McGee as your backup center. That's not right there for a championship compared to the rest of the league when you have the best duo in basketball and not an ideal rotation, but everyone I mentioned there is available. Mm-hmm. I didn't even include Danny Green because if Kawhi goes to Toronto, I think Danny would go with him as well. You don't think that right there is one of the best teams in basketball?
No. I think it gets you into the playoffs in the Western Conference, but you're just looking at, you know, this stuff on paper and saying, like, all these guys look like they could fit. Andre Iguodala at 30-whatever years old
36,
is going to fit into that
36.
Mix. Marcus Morris, I like Marcus Morris a lot in terms of his toughness, but is he the shooter that you need? Had a good first half of last season as
a
shooter.
And then fell off.
And then fell off a cliff there. So I think it has, like, some decent names there, but we had some decent names last year in Los Angeles. And granted, you didn't have Anthony Davis there in that mix, but Rondo was a good name. Lance Stephenson was a name. I mean, you had some guys that you plugged into that rotation that had talent and had success in the NBA, but not team success. I don't think I would put them well behind the Utahs and Portlands and
even Golden State. Isn't Utah a team on paper right now? Isn't Utah we haven't seen Mike Conley?
Utah addressed weaknesses. Utah addressed specific weaknesses to their team and got better in those aspects. Mike Conley is an upgrade over Ricky Rubio. Yeah. Bojan Bogdanovic is an upgrade of what they had the 3-4 spot. So they didn't revamp anything. They just upgraded what was around their two stars.
I think both of you make some great points. I think that your point as far as next year the struggle, that would be real. And that would be just like LeBron experiencing his first year there in Miami. Like, he's going to have some hodgepodge as far as the rest of that lineup. I think your point as far as the NBA has changed. We can't think. We're not going through the Golden State the last 3-5 years. Like, and even Golden State with their top two, with Klay being hurt, this is going to be a total different NBA. My perspective is, being in the Western Conference, how many series can this team withstand of being pushed to the max? Not being together, not having that chemistry, because you're still going to have some workload management with AD and with LeBron as you go through the regular season, and that's not the roster that's equipped to be able to handle them being out. So I think it's very important for the Lakers in this era with LeBron, if they are going to get the most out of it, it's important they do something in year two with Kawhi. And I think your point, multiple championships to potentially no championships, I believe that's real, and that's on the board.
But as far as we go out west, because I do not think the team that I just laid out for you is a 59-win team. I don't think it's a team that can be the first or second seed out west. But in a playoff series, we don't have to go to year 8 LeBron or year 10 LeBron. Let's just go to the last time we saw LeBron in the playoffs. Year 15 LeBron. Now, I know this will be year 17. We saw him with no teammate within a country mile of Anthony Davis stare down guys with better rosters because they could not match him in the postseason. I look out west, and I think Utah's got an awesome starting five. When I said they're just on paper, I actually really do like Utah. I agree with you. Donovan Mitchell, Joe Ingles, Bogdanovich ready to stare down LeBron and AD in a playoff series. I'll believe it when I see it. CJ and Dame ready to stare down LeBron in a playoff series. Golden State, the last time they had to stare down LeBron in a playoff series with a better team but without Kevin Durant, they ended up going home on the wrong side of it. I like the Rockets a lot. We know their struggles in the playoffs, at least historically, fair or not. It's just against the Warriors. I don't know that there's a team in a series, forget having the best player on the court, that would have one of the two best players on the court out west. I think that plays in the Lakers' enormous favor.
Well, look, I get what you're saying, but first of all, year 15 LeBron and year, what, 17 LeBron?
17,
this
it's
year,
a one-year game.
But I think there could be, coming off a major injury, there could be even more of a slide in the next year. And yes, that Cavaliers team wouldn't have the star power of an Anthony Davis, but it was built around LeBron.
It was rebuilt four times that year.
Okay, but it was built with the type of players that fit LeBron James, the shooters, the George Hill types. They built a team around one player's strengths. What you're talking about with this Laker team, that what it could be this year without Kawhi, is what's left over. Not like you're going out there strategically picking players that fit alongside LeBron and Anthony Davis. You're picking players who are just available to go out and sign.
And I think both of you have tremendous question marks. Before we went into free agency, what was the Lakers' skill level going to be in adding this key guy? Who's good at shooting threes? Who is just a defensive specialist? Who as a point guard? Mm-hmm. Who's going to be the backup center? We both have questions as far as, are they going to be able to do that, which really supports your case that now with all those guys being gone, how can you do a good job when you only got scraps to build a pick?
And
from?
I love Frank Vogel, one of my favorite coaches in the NBA, but he's a variable in all this too. Like, how does Frank Vogel put all this together? Like, all those big personalities. And you would probably, I'm assuming, Nick, that the guys they're signing, you're talking like 1+1 type deals as last year. I said this on this show this time last year, that a bunch of mercenaries isn't going to work. Like, everybody kind of has their own interest when they're signing one-year deals. That, to me, is another factor in all this.
If you follow Patriots All-Pro tight end Rob Gronkowski on the gram, like I do, you know he's thoroughly enjoying retirement for now. The three-time Super Bowl champ is nearly 20 pounds down from his playing weight. But don't count him out just yet. Gronk jokingly said, call me when you get to the playoffs. See, with the team as presently constructed, how much better would the Pats be if Gronk returned?
Man, Gronk can't return. What'd you say? You follow him on the gram?
What's he
looking like on the gram?
It's a little svelter than he was before.
Oh, okay. When you watch Gronk, what does Gronk do that's graceful? Nothing.
Nothing. He uses that size.
Yeah, and you can't go through or not work out. You know the reason why? I tried this. I retired after 15 years in the league, took a great broadcasting job, HBO Inside the NFL, Bob Costas, Dan Marino, Chris Collinsworth, my first gig. Dolphins, week number 4, I think, Monday night, they get two receivers banged up in the Monday night game in Denver. Rick Spielman, the general manager of the Vikings now, was in control of their football operations, called me the next morning. Hey, Chris, how you doing? I said, I didn't even say hello. I said, you're not calling me to see how I'm doing. He was like, oh, yeah, how's your family? Oh, my family's great.
Let's get to the
point. What do you want?
Right.
Did you watch the game last night? Yes, I saw Chris Chambers get hurt. I saw Rondae Gatson, break his wrist. What kind of shape you in? Basketball shape. I can't play no football. He was like, what do you think about potentially just maybe in the red zone, third down? I was like, oh, yeah, ego jump. Oh, yeah, I can do that in my sleep. I can absolutely. That's worth having a conversation. Went to my bosses there at HBO. They were like, we're all for it. No players ever broadcasted live doing the show and played. It's like, oh, I went for that sucker move. That Miami Heat, those first few days of practice, me being a workout warrior, regimented I wasn't ready to play in the NFL. So, Gronk, don't do this to yourself. Don't do this because I almost killed myself, literally. 5 weeks later, I'm end up in the hospital. My kidney functioned at 20% because I hadn't put my body through the proper things that you need to be. You need to have some respect for the game and how you got to be who you are. And realize you're not walking off some sofa, out of some house, living some type of lifestyle, any type of way, and walking into the NFL and trying to have some type of impact.
And tell me if I'm wrong, see, even if Gronk hadn't lost these 20 pounds, it's not just, let's just say he was working out every day. If your mind is retired, it's not just getting your body in shape. You've talked about how you had to get yourself mentally prepared for what you are about to do to yourself and to others on that football field. And that mentality compared to the mentality of Gronk living his best life as a young 30 in retirement, rich, doing media tours, doing all these different things. Even if he got his body right, getting your mind right when he's saying for the playoffs, call me for the playoffs. Listen, if you could transport the Gronk that left the field in the Super Bowl, made the biggest plays in the game against the Chiefs, then made the biggest plays in the game against the Rams to week 16 of this year, then of course that would make the Patriots much better. They need a tight end. I'm looking at their tight ends. Ben Watson. I have tremendous respect for Ben Watson. Ben Watson, he made an unbelievable play in the 2005 divisional game against the Denver Broncos. Like, that's their tight end. Matt Lacoste, who was a street free agent this year. Like, you got to go down that list before, and you're not going to find a name. Of course, they need him, but even if his body got ready, would his mind be, how do you get your mind ready? I don't know.
And it's not just can your body get ready, right? You want your guy to show up at training camp. You want your guy to get the reps. You want your guy to get into, even if you've been doing it for so many years, you got to build up that momentum, that body, that all of it, to have the mental and the physical stamina to get back into a football game.
There's a process in being an NFL player. And there's even a more strenuous process in being a great one. And it's very, very regimented. It's very, very methodical. And I'm going to tell you what the 4th of July. 4th of July don't mean the same thing for NFL players. Let me tell you what it means. It means that's the last vacation you're going to get a chance to be able to spend some quality time with your kids until the bye week. You're getting ready to lock yourself into training camp, 4 to 6 weeks of mental and physical combat to get your body ready for 5 months of an NFL season. And it's a mental thing that you have to go places in your brain that you don't have to go there if you're just working out. And one of the biggest things that I know can't be duplicated, my training staff. I continue to work out with them, but they couldn't get me to do the things that they forced me to do when I was playing. And it was a typical, my Ron D'Angelo, the first guy I ran my first facility we opened in Florida. He had one trigger. He would call me at 6, and if I didn't answer after the first ring, he would call me again. And he would say, you need to get your ASS up because the greatest receiver in football, Jerry Rice, will be up in 3 hours training, and he won't be making any excuses. And you know what? Regardless of the aches, the pains, everything I had, that was my trigger. Man, I got to get up before Jerry Rice because he's already better than me. I can't let him work out and me not work out. And that type of mentality can't be duplicated. And we can't. There's a process to everything in life. There's certain things can't be shortchanged, can't be a shortcut. And being a great NFL player, man, Gronk's one of the greatest. He's in the conversation of the greatest who ever played his position. And now we're getting ready to, microwave that? He's getting ready to go out there, and his number one asset is not his brain, it's his body, and he's getting ready to disregard that? Oh, no. Gronk, take some advice from me, man. All right? I ended up in the hospital, man. Kidneys not working, not functioning. No, this is not the NBA. You're not going out there to play 36 holes of golf. You can really get hurt. And you respect the process. You build yourself into a great player. No, man. Listen to people who know. I wish someone would have told me that. I would have kept my butt on TV.
Would you have listened?
Absolutely. Like if someone would have told me what the...
Yeah.
It wasn't just your kidneys. You got a lacerated spleen, right?
Yeah, the Dolphins happened to be. Man, they were 45 minutes from my house.
Yeah.
And,
nice. And they offered you a big bag of money.
It was a 750.
Go.
I mean, I had
break.
To go get that bag. Man.
We're back right after this.
It ain't changed. We didn't even call it a bag. Then we just called it the money.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.